Today's shir and every shir throughout the summer is sponsored by Ben Yael England. It was a chusur for Shlema for Zacharia Kalman, Ben Yael Margalit. Yeah, you can make brachas. That was thunder and lightning. So, we are going to finish off Beli Neder. We're going to try to finish off Pas Akum tonight, and Be'ezras Hashem Yisbarach. Tomorrow night we will start with the sugya of Bishul Akum. There are marmakomos for Bishul Akum out there near my shtender. You don't need them tonight, but they're there for the taking for tomorrow. Bishul Akum is going to take us a long time, so I wanted to get moving, try to finish up Pas Akum. Last night we started a discussion. We transitioned from the basic analysis of the sugya and the rishonim into the very practical halacha. And we started a discussion about factory-made bread. And we pointed out that even though the Gemara only talks about two types of bread, it talks about pas palabayis and it talks about pas palter, nowadays there's a third metzius, and that's factory-made bread. And the question is factory-made bread just pas palter on a larger scale, or is it a whole different category? Maybe when it's made by a corporation, it's made by a large factory, that it should be even better than pas palter. Pas palter is your local baker, you know who he is at least. But when it comes to factory-made bread, maybe that's even better than pas palter, because you have no relationship whatsoever. So we were trying to point out the four potential kulas you have in pas palter. We were up to number four, and number four helps us transition into Bishul Akum a little bit also. First major kula we pointed out was Rav Moshe's kula in regards to Bishul Akum, that's quoted by Rav Nata Greenblatt in the first Masorah journal, that whenever the type of cooking is a type of cooking that not only is it done far away in a way that you have no relationship with the person, but it's done in a way that anybody you would have a relationship with couldn't even do it. It's not even shaykh that you would have a relationship with a person who bakes or cooks in this kind of way, because they use industrial equipment, they use machinery that you can't use. So in that situation, Rav Moshe held Bishul Akum is going to be muti. That's not going to be a problem of Bishul Akum. And l'chara hu adin for Pas Akum. We pointed out that Rav Vazner quoted the Chazanish that he didn't like that kula at all, and we had several svaras why not to like that kula. Whether it be that in your home you can also, it's not that it's illegal for you to buy industrial equipment, you could also cook that way, or whether it just be like a low plug type of thing, that low plug would apply regardless of how the food is cooked or baked. Second clue we had is that the Jew only needs to do a little bit in terms of participating in the baking process, and it could be that any bread or baked product that has a mashkiach on premises, maybe you could rely at least that it's a suffix, that the mashkiach did something to help in the baking process. The third kula we had was that it could be that it's not even called pas akum because it's the machine that's doing it, and most of the bread comes from a koach sheni, is not immediate. When the guy pushes the button, the bread automatically comes out. Most of it is with some sort of time delay, comes much later, and maybe that's a koach sheni type of thing. I didn't like that kula very much because, after all, that makes sense by matzah, because matzah has a din l'shma. When it comes to Pas Akum, it doesn't seem that there's any such heter of koach sheni when it comes to Pas Akum. So that brings us. No, that was not Rav Moshe. I think Rabbi Jachter quoted it in his article. He tried to make that tushtel from matzah to Pas Akum. Now, fourth possible kula is quoted in the Masorah journal. It's not quoted in the Masorah journal, actually. It's the fourth possible kula is that factory bread, just to mention it, is that factory bread is not alal shulchan melachim. That in order for it to be a problem of Pas Akum, it needs to be the type of bread that would be used al shulchan melachim. So maybe, because we know that there is such a concept by Bishul, the Gemara never says by Pas Akum that it needs to be alal shulchan melachim, but the Gemara does say by Bishul that it's only a problem of Bishul Akum if it's alal shulchan melachim. If it's the type of food that would not be alal shulchan melachim, wouldn't be served on a king's table, it's not going to be a problem of Bishul Akum. The Gemara says that explicitly. We're going to see that in the Gemara tomorrow. But so one might suggest that the same would apply by Pas Akum, that the type of bread that's not olal shulchan melachim, that wouldn't be used on a king's table, is not going to be subject to the problem of Pas Akum. If you were to attend a state dinner, I can assure you they're not going to open up fresh packages of Wonder Bread to serve. They're going to have fresh baked rolls that are made by the White House chef. There's no way they would use industrial baked bread. It's not the same quality, and they would never use it. So maybe you have that heter that it's not Ola al Shulchan Malachim. If there are two problems with this heter, though. Problem number one is how to define the term Ola al Shulchan Malachim, which is really a Bishalachim Sugya, but we'll discuss it. We'll discuss it now a little bit. And problem number two is, even once you define Ola al Shulchan Malachim, as I said, it's a Bishalachim Sugya. Does every heter we have for Bishalachim automatically apply to Pasachim as well? Not so pashut. That everything, all the kulas that you have by Bishul Akum apply to Pasachim, maybe they have different sets of rules, and whatever we say by Bishul does not necessarily apply to Pas. So let's take one problem at a time. In terms of defining the term, Ola al Shulchan Malachim, so in the Masorah journal that you have in the, photocopied in the back of your packets, he has a couple of paragraphs on the, again, it's a piece that Rabbi Ganak wrote about Bishul Akum, but he has a couple of paragraphs on the concept of Ola al Shulchan Malachim, which is pages Pei Vav and Pei Zayin in the Masorah Journal, is the first photocopy page after the Bar Ilan Mar Makomos run out. So in Os Beis, Hatanai Deroy Lalas al Shulchan Malachim, second line over there. The Yeshlis Tapik Bag Doras Din Zed, the Ola al Shulchan Malachim, that we have room to have Sveikos about how exactly to define this din of Ola al Shulchan Malachim. Should we say Ola al Shulchan Malachim means, as we said yesterday, that it would be served at a state dinner, it would be served at a king's banquet? Or maybe it means something that's not such a lowly food that a king would refuse to eat it. If they would serve it for breakfast to the king when he's all alone having breakfast, that's also Ola al Shulchan Malachim, as long as it's not such poor quality that the king would refuse to eat it. V'shamati me'arav agon of Shimon Schwab Shlita, now it's obviously Zichron Levracha, Shepam shol me'chazon ish, that Rav Schwab said he wants to ask the Chazon Ish. It's funny, this is the second time already we've had Rav Schwab in our Machal Yakum Shirim. We had him asking Rav Moshe Shaila about, what was it? That was Gvina Sakum. And now we have Rav Schwab asking the Chazon Ish. That ma daito al dvar achilas ha-sardinim hanem karim b'kufsa'os. He asked Chazon Ish, what about canned sardines? As we mentioned, Minig in Europe was all the Rosh Yeshiva ate canned sardines, even though they were not cooked by Jews. They were cooked by non-Jews. So should you say that it's Bishul Akum or no? And the Chazon Ish said, Osir. Then he said, what about all the Rosh Yeshivas in Europe that eat it, and they eat canned sardines, and they're not worried about Bishul Akum, apparently, because they hold it's not Ola al Shulchan Malachim. So the Chazon Ish said, Gam Melech Anglia ochel sardinim bad aruchas haboker shalo. The King of England also has sardines for breakfast. Meaning he defines Ola al Shulchan Malachim not based on what they would have at a banquet at a state dinner, but based on what they would have for breakfast, based on whether they would eat it. So he says that's the machlokas of the Hagdara of how to define Ola al Shulchan Malachim. Rav Salvechik, he quotes, came down on the side that anything that wouldn't be served at a banquet. So he's held all canned foods would not be subject to Bishul Akum, because canned foods, they would never serve at a banquet. You're not going to go to a state dinner at the White House and have someone come out with a can opener and open up your food and serve it on your plate. So they would never serve canned foods, right? The assumption is that that's a lower quality food. Everything is made fresh at a state dinner. Now, to take it one step further, he says that it seems that this is not just a machlokas Chazon Ish and European Rosh Yeshiva, or Chazon Ish and Rav Salvechik. It seems that this is two Deus and Tosfos. Tosfos discusses when they make beer with grains, why is it not a problem of Bishul Akum? Why are you allowed to buy beer in the store and you're not worried about Bishul Akum when we buy beer? The halacha is you are allowed to buy beer, even nowadays. An unflavored beer does not require hashgacha. You can go and buy beer anywhere, and that's kosher. I would just tell you, before you buy, come to my house, because I have from four Shalom Zachars left over that never got drunk. So, but you're allowed to theoretically go buy beer in a store without any hashgacha. So fructosos, why isn't it a problem of Bishul Akum? They cook the grains into the beer, so isn't it a Bishul Akum problem? So Tosos gives two terutzim. Teretz number one, he says, he quotes over here, is that It's not halal shulchan lachem. People don't drink beer at a state dinner. The president has his beer summit with a police officer that he criticizes publicly, but that's, you know, in a separate thing, a backyard, laid back kind of thing. But he wouldn't serve beer at a state dinner. O tamach lahatir. A second reason Tosa says, when it comes to making a bracha on the beer, do you make a hadama because it's on a raw grain, or a mizonos because it's a grain that somehow is made into a beer? You don't make a hadama or a mizonos. What do you make on beer? Shahakal. Why? Because essentially, what are you really drinking? It's water. It's just water with some grain mixed in. But primarily it's water. So since you would make a shahakal, it's batel legabe bishlakam also. And therefore legabe segum, therefore legabe bishlakam, it's also called water. The grain is batel to the beer. So Rabbi Ganak wants to argue that those two deis and Tosfos are arguing about the hagdara of olal shulchan malachim. When Tosfos offers a second answer to Akasha, it's not just because he thought of another answer, it's usually because we always assume that it's two deis and Tosfos that are disagreeing with each other, that the second day of Tosfos didn't like the first answer, had a problem with the first answer of Tosfos. So the first answer of Tosfos says, in olal shulchan malachim, and that's why it's not a problem with bishlakim. Second answer of Tosfos must hold that beer is olal shulchan lachim, and therefore he needs to come up with another answer. Oh, it's because it's bottled to the water and just has a din of water. But olal shulchan lachim is not going to be a good enough heter according to the second answer. Why not? So says Rabbi Ganak, they're arguing about that exact issue. How do you define olal shulchan lachim? First day says beer is not olal shulchan lachim because he understands olal shulchan lachim to mean a state dinner, state banquet. Second day it says beer is olal shulchan lachim, doesn't say it, but implies that beer is olal shulchan lachim, because he defines it not by a state banquet, but by something that a king would eat or drink, and the king most certainly would eat or drink beer. Yeah?
According to the second answer, Tosos, the reason we make shahakal isn't necessarily because it's all water. Any time that we have something that's not in its most commonly used form, we make shahakal. When you can't recognize it.
Not necessarily. When it comes to... When you can't recognize it, okay, but over here you can recognize it. You can recognize its effect. Right? Meaning... let's say, you know, raw grains that you just toast or something. So that's not its most commonly used form. Normally you grind it down into flour and use it to make cakes and cookies. But if you just toast raw grains, so the bracha would be adama. It doesn't become shakal. Right?
I think if you can't recognize it anymore. If someone showed you beer and someone showed you barley, you can't.
Okay, so again, the other Rishonim might say that, but Tosfos says these two terutzim. So at least within this Tosfos, right, the lumdus would still work within this Tosfos. Yeah?
Would practically every food fall into that second category of Tosfos that a king would eat it? Like,
no foods that are very, like, that are, let's say, hot dogs. I don't know, hot dogs, maybe not. It probably depends on the quality of the hot dog. But lower quality foods would fit into that category. What? Beer's not a lower quality food. There happen to be some very fine beers. I'm told I happen to not like
beer,
it, but... I don't know if that's how we would define beer. Beer was like what they would drink. It was like their number one, it was their main drink. It's Khmer Medina, right? I don't know if we would define it as a lower quality food. I'm trying to think of a good example. Anyone have good examples of what would be a lower quality food that a king wouldn't eat?
Okay.
What?
America.
I mean, the canned foods is probably the best example. It's just, now it's beneath him. He eats fresh food. He doesn't eat canned foods. That would probably be microwave dinners, things like that. You know, he would never touch it, even when it's not a state dinner. So that is, and then Rabbi Ganak just points out. I think this is Rabbi Ganak. It might be Rav Shechter. I forgot to look who wrote the article, but then he points out that this is one of the heterim they have for tuna fish. The OU had a big tuna fish controversy. Rabbi Tendler Shlita very strongly holds that the OU tuna fish is not kosher, you're not allowed to eat it. There are many Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael also that won't eat OU tuna fish. So what's the problem? So a lot of people aren't aware of what the problem is. They assume that the problem is that there are dolphins mixed in. So as long as you see dolphin safe, it's okay. There are no dolphins in your tuna fish. That's not the issue. Rabbi Talmud doesn't think there are dolphins in your tuna fish either. The primary issue, well, first of all, there are different types of tuna, and there are issues in terms of kashrus of fish and how to identify kashrus of fish, and if the scales have fallen off, You know, what, whether you can still assume that, or how small scales are, whether they still have a din of scales. But the primary issue is really a Bishul Akum issue, that they catch all these tunas and they put it on the boat and they put it into these giant steam cookers, and there are non-Jews doing this. The Jewish mashkichim aren't going out on all the fishing boats. So the dugim tuna fish, or you know, whatever the firm brand is, they have mashkichim doing all that stuff also. But if you don't, have mashkichim doing it, you have goyim cooking it. So one of the terim that the OU has is that tuna fish is not a problem with Bishul Akum. Why not? It's Einol El Shulchan Malachim, canned tuna. Since it's in the can, it's not something that a king would eat. It's beneath his dignity to eat. Einol El Shulchan Malachim. Now, this part of this issue, and I guess we'll get to this in Bishul Akum, but just to mention, is when you say that something's not Einol El Shulchan Malachim, does that mean that kind of food is not Einol El Shulchan Malachim? Or that particular food is not Allah Shulchan Malachim. Meaning there are people that will serve at a very fancy dinner tuna that's sliced or smoked or whatever, that's not canned tuna, that's fresh, really good, high quality tuna, and that is a much higher quality. So do you say, well, tuna fish as a whole would be Allah Shulchan Malachim, just this particular tuna is not? So how do you look at it? Do you look at this particular one, or do you look at on the whole? Sushi, tuna fish and sushi, very often will be Allah Shulchan Malachim. Now you have another heter there, because sushi is, if you're going to look at sushi to be your defining point, it's nechal kmo shuchai, it's eaten raw. That's the other heter of Bishul Akum, that we eat tuna fish. That was another issue. That was another one of the heterim that the OU had, was that people eat sushi. So it's, and that this article was written in like 1989 or something, when no Jews ate sushi. Nowadays it's like no Jew doesn't eat sushi. It's changed a lot in the last 20 years in terms of our attitude towards sushi. Yeah.
So does it mean you've gone to a sushi bar, that's a pure sushi bar, and pick out a certain type of sushi and eat it?
What do you mean?
It's a not kosher restaurant, that you're on like a business.
I mean, there's just like a lot to
discuss here.
There's a lot that you have to be careful about, you know, in terms of the cleanliness of the knives and things like that. In general, treif fish stores, Jews traditionally have shopped at non-kosher fish stores. They would go in and they would be able to identify the fish. They would ask the guy to wipe off the knife, and he would slice up the fish in front of you. You would see what kind of fish it is. You would ask him for salmon, you would ask him for whatever, and he would and you would see how he sliced, how he filleted the fish right in front of you. So you would see that he took off the scales, and that's fine. That's totally mutter. If you want to buy salmon in Costco, for instance, right? So that was, I had a whole to do about this. Salmon in Costco. The OU policy officially right now is, although it might change soon, is that salmon is salmon. That you don't need, it's so identifiable by its color and by its unique color that you don't even need to see the scales. That it's okay. If you see fresh salmon in Costco without any hashkacha, you could buy it. In Costco, you don't have to worry about the knives that are used, because they're only cutting salmon with the salmon knives. They don't even do it. They don't even prepare it there. It gets prepared by the grower, who's only dealing with salmon. So you know, you wouldn't have to worry about the knives. But whatever, that's, you know, yeah.
And with sushi that's cooked nowadays.
Yes, that's obviously a whole new can of worms. That's a whole different issue, because then you do have to worry about Bishul Akum if it's something that needed to be cooked. Okay, we'll get to sushi, God willing, in the Bishul Akum sugya. Let's leave it aside for now. So basically, problem number one with saying that factory bread is okay because it's not Olal Shulchan Malachim is, how do you define Olal Shulchan Malachim? Would the king not have peanut butter and jelly sandwich on Wonder Bread? Would President Obama not have the peanut butter and jelly sandwich on Wonder Bread? He probably would. Why not? It's just that he wouldn't have it at a state dinner. So it could be that it is Olal Shulchan Malachim. So that is problem number one. Problem number two is, do we know for sure that Olal Shulchan Malachim is even a concept that matters to us in the sugya of Pas Akum? Or maybe it's only a concept in the sugya of Bishul Akum. So the Avnei Nezer, in source number 26, it's this long tshuva, but at the very, very end of the long tshuva he writes, Shegam Yisr Pas Eino Elim Kein Olal Shulchan Malachim, that the Yisr Pas Akum is also only if it's Olal Shulchan Malachim. You don't have to worry about Pas Akum. The whole rest of the tshuva is all about a mumar. If you have a problem of Pas Akum, when the guy is not a guy, but it's a mumar, it's someone who's a Mechal Shabbos Beferhesi or something like that, someone who's an irreligious Jew. So that's what the whole rest of the tshuva is, where the Avnei Nezer believes that a mumar is aser, that it's included in the gzeira of Pas Akum. But at the end, he just throws in this one idea that even the Yisr Pas is only if it's not Olal Shulchan Malachim. Malachim, that the same Gedarim of Bishul apply to Pas as well. However, that is not so Pashut at all. In the Chelkas Binyamin, he has a major discussion about this, and on page Hey in the Chelkas Binyamin, one of the, I don't even know how to describe where it is in the packet, but on page Hey in the Chelkas Binyamin, he writes that harbe kulos nemru bepas mashalo nemru bebishul, that there are a lot of kulos that we say about pasakum that we don't say about bishulakum. Ugon kula de paspalter. We know by pasakum we have a kula of paspalter. We don't have such a kula by bishulakum. If you get if you go to a local restaurant, it has to be cooked by a Jew. If it's not cooked by a Jew, if a Jew didn't turn on the fire in your local restaurant, you're not allowed to eat it. And on the flip side, v'chein li'idach kisa yesh kula b'bishul mashalo nemar b'pas. There's a kula by bishulakum that doesn't have by pasakum. What's that? She isur bishul dafka b'machal machshuv ma'olun al shulchan malachim. That the isur of bishulakum is only on chashuv of foods that are all al shulchan malachim. But the isur of pasakum is even on foods that are not all al shulchan malachim. Why? What's the svara? Why should there be a chilek? Why should it be that bishulakum? So first think, what's the svara by bishulakum? Why is it that by bishulakum the isser is only on chashuva foods, on foods that are all al shulchan malachim? No, what's svara? What do you think? Well, I guess we didn't do bishulakum yet, but let's assume the concern of bishulakum is that also a relationship issue. You're going to become close to him. You're going to feel grateful to him, and
you're going to like his steak.
Right. So why is that only a problem with food that's all al shulchan malachim? Why aren't we worried you're going to like his?
What? Not good. There's going to be no relationship formed from it.
Right, meaning if it's not high quality food, so you're not going to feel that same sense of gratitude to him for doing any great favors to you. Right, l'chara, that's the svara when it comes to bishulakum. So why by pasakum should it not matter whether it's olal shulchan malachim? So says Rabbi Yamin Kohn, the chalkas b'yamin, and b'tama davar nira, mishum delechem hu machul chashuv mitzad atzmuso, shu ikra suda. The whole idea of olal shulchan malachim is that when it's olal shulchan malachim, it's chashuv. When it's not olal shulchan malachim, it's not chashuv. Bread, by definition, is chashuv. It's always the ikra of the suda. It's the most important thing at the suda, and therefore, by definition, it's a chashuva food. Inami Avshalomar, testam pasal al shulchan malachim. Ulfichach lochil kubacham mashen kin betafshil. Or you could say that 98% of breads in the world are all al shulchan malachim. There's very few, at the time the Chazal made the gzera, there weren't too many breads that were not all al shulchan malachim. So it makes sense that they would make a low plug across the board that all breads should be a problem of pasakum. But by bishul, you never had a situation where 98% of the foods in the world were all al shulchan malachim. So by bishul, it made sense for them to start being mechalik, because it was more closer to a 50-50 type of situation. So they would make such a chilek. So those are two possibilities, Rabbi Yamin Kohn suggests, to say that the idea of all al shulchan malachim only applies to bishulakum, does not apply to pasakum. There's no such heter by pasakum. However, he says at the end that the Bach, the Levush, many poskim disagree and hold that pas shel mina melu vadei ena chashuv al shulchan. I'm sorry, that's going on different types of bread, pas kitnis, etc. If you look in the biurim on the side of page Hay over there, again in it's probably page 24 or so in your packets. If you look at the biurim on the side of page Hay, he tries to bring rayas that this is true, that ol al shulchan malachim is dafka adin in bishulakum and not a din in pasakum. And raya number one, he says, me'atur midkas of timeim shonim lahad pas kitnis ein ba mishum pasakum bishulakum. The tour tries to explain why pas kitnis, pas that's not made out of grain, it's made out of like beans or something, so it's a lower grade bread, why it's not a problem of pas or bishulakum. And the tour gives a whole bunch of reasons. He says by pas, because it's not normal bread. And since it's not normal bread, it's not included in the gzeira. When it comes to bishul, he says that it's not chashuv, meaning it's not olal shulchan malachim. No, so what's his raya? If by pas, it's olal shulchan malachim, makes a difference also. So why, when the Torah is giving a reason that pas kitnis is not bishulakum, he goes to olal shulchan malachim, he goes to Ein Olal Shulchan Malachim, when he's describing where it's not Pasakum, he doesn't say because Ein Olal Shulchan Malachim. It must be that Ein Olal Shulchan Malachim doesn't help you for Pasakum. It only helps you vis-a-vis Bishulakum. So he says that's Raya number one. And he says you could also prove from the Shulchan Aruch, because Shulchan Aruch holds like the Torah that Pas Kitnis does not have a problem with Bishulakum, and it must be because Zayin al Shulchan Malachim. So that heter should also work for Pasakim as well, but yet Shulchan Aruch doesn't quote that heter for Pasakim. So the Chalkas Binyamin, Rabbi Yamin Cohen, seems pretty strong on the idea that Olal Shulchan Malachim is not a heter for Pasakim, it is a heter for Bishalakim. And that's why, if you recall, the first year we had in Pasakim, the very first thing I said is that when foods are prepared by a non-Jew, you need to define what area of halacha we're dealing with. Are we dealing with the halachos of Bishalakum or the halachos of Pasakum? And that's what we're going to discuss a little later tonight. When you have Dunkin' Donuts, for instance, is that Bishalakum or is it Pasakum? Why is it important to know? Well, first of all, there's no heter of Palter by Bishal. Second of all, there's no heter of Shulchan Malachim when it comes to Pas. There may be no heter of Nechol Kamo Shulchai when it comes to Pas. Maybe no such thing as Nechol Kamo Shulchai when it comes to Pas. But anyway, those are the Gedarim of Pasakim, and the Gedarim of Bishalakim are different from each other. It's important to be able to define what's what. So that's why that fourth heter of factory bread, that it's not all Shulchan Malachim, doesn't seem to be the strongest of the heterim. What the strongest of the heterim probably is the first one, that Rav Moshe, held that it's not shayich to have a relationship with someone who cooks in that way. Now, I don't know why I'm mentioning this here. It's a little bit of an aside, but I just threw it in the outline over here. The idea that of Aseres Yimei Tshuva, the Torah in Aruch Chaim, Sim Tav Reish Gimel, source number 27, in the packets, writes at the end over there that there's a minute in Yisrael, Noag and Ba'ashkenaz, that even someone who's not makbid on Pasakim the whole rest of the year, Aseres Yimei Tshuva, who nizar, is careful during the Aseres Yimei Tshuva. Rabbi Sabalovsky once explained that the reason why we're dafka makbid during Aseres Yimei Tshuva is that really there was a gezerah of Pasakum. They partially rescinded the gezerah when it came to Paspalter. But why did they partially rescind that gezerah? Why did they take away the gezerah when it came to Paspalter? Because Chai Nefesh, we needed it. We needed the bread. It was too difficult for us to go all year without bread. So Rabbi Salosky just pointed out, Davar Pashut, it's not too difficult for anybody to go 10 days without Paspalter. So since the tam of Chai Nefesh wasn't needed to make it always mutter, it was just needed to make it usually mutter, so it could be that they never rescinded the Gzeira during the Aseres Yimei Tshuva. Now, that's definitely not the Pashup Pshat. Pashup Pshat is they did rescind the Gzeira, and it's a minhag, and it's only a minhag. We only do mitam minhag, not mitam Gzeira, during the Aseres Yimei Tshuva. But maybe even within that, you could say the reason for the minhag is that we can live without it, that we don't need to rely on rescinding of the Gzeira during the Aseres Yimei Tshuva. Rabbi Sabalovsky uses this to explain a sheet of Rav Sadyagon that's quoted in the Rosh Maseches Yuma. Rav Sadyagon in the Rosh in Yuma says that you should make a bracha on the tevila when you go to the mikvah on Erev Yom Kippur. That you should make a bracha on the tevila. So the Rosh says that that's so strange. We never find such an idea that you make a bracha on that tevila. Women make a bracha when they go to the mikvah. They have a mitzvah to go to the mikvah. A man goes to the mikvah on Erev Yom Kippur. It's a minhag. It's something that's for Tosefes Kedusha. It's a nice thing. It's good. It's quoted in Shulchan Aruch. But to make a bracha on it, who ever heard of such a thing? So the Rosh says, he says, "Ein dvar v'nirim b'zeh, shalom atzinu b'ashas remez l'tevila zu." The Gemara doesn't even mention that there's any such requirement for such a tevila. Ein lo yisod neviim v'lo minag neviim. So where would you get the idea that you make a bracha? So Rabbi Sabalovsky suggested along similar lines, that really, men should always be going to the mikvah. Married men should be going to the mikvah all the time. Why? Because Ezra was mesakein that a balkeri needs to be tovel before he learns Torah or davens or does any dvarim shebekdusha before he says brachos. How does a person become a balkeri? When a person is motzi zera, not levatela, motzi zera at any point. So a man is with his wife, he sleeps with his wife, he's a balkeri. Right? We always associate tumma with bad. It doesn't mean bad, it's just a situation that comes up. A woman becomes a nid every month, not because she's bad, right? Tumma is not always associated with doing something wrong. A man becomes a balkeri, not because he did something wrong, because he slept with his wife, so he becomes a balkeri. So he has tumma's keri. So there was takanas Ezra, and you gotta go to the mikvah. The takana, the Gemara says, was repealed. Why? Because gzera shein rov tzibri chol namabba. People couldn't handle it. To have to go to the mikvah so frequently, it wasn't something that was shaykh for most people. And the Gemara actually says, what was the problem? I think the Rishonim explained over there, or it might be the Gemara itself, I don't remember, that the problem was, if you're going to require people to go to the mikvah, they're going to end up being purish from their, I think the Gemara said 2 days in the Gemara, they're going to end up being purish from their wives, because they're going to say, Should I have the beer tonight? Should I not? Nah, I just don't want to wake up early to go to the mikveh tomorrow. Not worth it. And then they're going to end up having less children because they're just going to get lazy about going to the mikveh. So it's a mishum pru revu. They had to take away that takana. The tzibur couldn't handle that takana. So Rabbi Sadlovsky suggested maybe you have the same idea to explain Rav Sadia Gaon, that if they took away the takana because it was something because of a major tzorech, yeah, it's a major tzorech to do that year round. But to dafka be makbid during a particular time of year, during the Aseres Yemei Tshuva or Erev Yom Kippur, something like that, not such a major tzorech. People are able to handle that. And when you go to the mikvah because of a real takana, a takana says, so vada you should make a bracha. No reason not to make a bracha then. It's a real mitzvah to go to the mikvah if it's mishum takana sezra. The only thing is, when we go to the mikvah, we're not fulfilling takana sezra anyway because we don't have takana sezra anymore. But if you were to still have it, so then you would make a bracha. That's how we wanted to explain that idea. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure I think he's just saying that the reason of the minhag is that we don't need to rely on the rescinding of the gzera. Not that it wasn't rescinded. Yeah. Whichever, I don't really care.
Just even within Ezra, is that really a mitzvah to go to the mikvah, or is it just a prerequisite in order to learn?
Going to the mikvah, let's say, is only a matir. Even if it's only a matir, you'd still make a bracha. We still make a bracha on a matir. A woman goes to the mikvah nowadays, it's just to be matir lebailo. There's no tevila bezmana, might be a mitzvah, but we don't have tevila bezmana anyway. A woman becomes a nida nowadays. Minat Torah, a woman becomes a nida, so 7 days later she goes to the mikvah as long as she's not bleeding anymore. So that night, 7 days later, is tevila bezmana. We don't do that. We don't even come close to that because we wait till the woman stops bleeding. Then after she stops bleeding, a minimum of 5 days till she stops bleeding, or even if she stops bleeding earlier, we wait a minimum of 5 days before we even start counting the 7 days, and then she goes to the mikvah. So it's not bizmana anyway. So, but why does a woman go to the mikvah? She goes to the mikvah to be matir herself labaila. So it's really a matir more than it is a mitzvah. Nevertheless, you still make a bracha on the tefillah. So even when the tefillah is a matir, I think you'd make the bracha. Why these 10?
No, but not these 10. But yeah, what about the 40s when you have to have a suda, and then there would be no other way to get bread?
Meaning you say that it's not so pashut that it's the truth is we pointed out in Mishnah Berurah. We pointed out Mishnah Berurah says that on Shabbos and Yom Tov you should try to be makbid only have pasas Yisrael anyway, and that's what people tend to do that. They buy at local bakeries. They don't buy packaged bread for Shabbos and Yom Tov. They buy local bakeries for Shabbos and Yom Tov, Jewish-owned bakeries. We'll see if Jewish-owned bakeries are good enough. Probably depends what you hold about the mitzvah of eating on Erev Yom Kippur. We had a whole share on that. Remember that one? Right? We had two possibilities. We had right? We had is it just a chana to be able to enable you to eat in Yom Kippur? To fast in Yom Kippur? Not to eat in Yom Kippur. To fast in Yom Kippur, or is it that the mitzvah suda of Yom Kippur, it's a yontif, so you should have a mitzvah suda, and you just push it forward to Erev Yom Kippur because there happens to be a technical isser standing in your way in Yom Kippur. So if it's the second, so then maybe, yeah, that it's a covet for the yontif, that's why you be mechaved the yontif. But if it's just to prepare you, to enable yourself to fast on Yom Kippur, so then maybe not. Maybe that's just, it would just be a achana. Yeah.
Wasn't there one day that said it's only 6 days? Did I say he's right? Wasn't there one day that said the two other days of Rosh Hashanah and the Shabbos aren't counted?
In the Hakpadah for Pasachim during Aseres Yemei Teshuva?
I think so.
Yeah? I don't remember. Anyone see that? No, I don't remember that. Find it. Let me know. Okay, so I don't know again why I put that over there. Now, in terms of Pasachim, what does it take for a Jew? What does a Jew need to do in order to save the bread from becoming Pasachim? So, there's an important comment of the Shach, Siman Kuf Yud Beis Sifkat in Zion, source number 30 in the Marmakomos. He says, "Dafka pas ovid kochavim, vava pas Yisrael sha'afa'o ovid kochavim, kasva tor shlo nagu b'shom makom lahatir, shareu kibishule ovid kochavim." Unbelievable. If you buy bread from a non-Jewish owned bakery, baked by a non-Jew, that's okay. As long as there is no... again, according to the Ramah, it's okay. It's just plain old okay. It's fine. But if you buy bread from a Jewish owned bakery, where the guy baking it is a non-Jew, that's a problem. That sounds counterintuitive. And it's a bigger problem if a Jew owns the bakery than if a non-Jew owns the bakery. If the non-Jew owns a bakery, it's palter. You have the heter of palter. But if a Jew owns a bakery, you don't have the heter of palter, and the guy baking it is a guy, so merely you have a problem with pasakum. That's what the Shach suggests. If you continue writing in the Shach, it's when why do we have a heter of palter when it's a goyish owned bakery? Because gzeirus and rovitz yibichol lamulba, but pashal Yisrael shafa ovid chavim, where it's a Jewish owned bakery that a guy is just doing the baking, that's not a gzeirus and rovitz yibichol lamulba. The tzibur should be able to handle that, and therefore it's going to be aser. Why should the tzibur be more able to handle that when it's a Jewish-owned bakery and the guy doing the baking?
Is there any other bakers in the bakery?
What?
Are we saying that the whole bakery is aser, or just the one?
The stuff baked by the non-Jew is aser in the Jewish-owned bakery.
Because then you can go to the non-Jew bakery.
Yeah, but why should that be better? Yeah.
You could just do one thing. You just press a button.
Good. If a Jew is around and a Jew owns the bakery, all he's got to do is press a button, throw in a piece of wood, do something to participate in the afiyah. When it's a Jewish-owned bakery, it should not be too difficult. It should not be something that ain't rovat zibur yichal lamud ba to avoid problems of pasakum. But in a non-Jewish-owned bakery, so a Jew's not going to be in the back involved in anything. It's a non-Jewish-owned bakery, non-Jews working there. So there it's a gzeirus shein rovitz yibur chol lamabah. We're not going to allow buying bread from such a bakery. So that's what the Shach wants to suggest, that a Jewish-owned bakery, it's a problem if the Jew is not helping in the baking. Now, in Chelkas Binyamin, he suggests that maybe there's a kula. He said maybe, we know by Bishul Akum, again, a good segue into Bishul Akum a little bit, by Bishul Akum, the Rama is makil, if you have a non-Jewish servant working in a Jewish home, there's a major help in certain bedieved situations. A non-Jewish servant working in a Jewish home, there's the Rama is makil in terms of Bishul Akum. Now, we're going to have to discuss how we define servant, and whether illegal alien who happens to be there for 6 months before her uncle dies in Trinidad or whatever, you know, or that's been our experience. Their uncles all die and they have to go back. But you know, whether that counts whether that counts as a servant, right? How you define it. But maybe if you have that Rama, at least in the back of our minds, that by when it comes to Bishul Akum, you have such a heter. So maybe you could say the same by Pasakum, that a Jewish-owned bakery, you have a non-Jew working for the Jew, maybe it has a din of a non-Jewish servant working on the premises of a Jew, and therefore it's going to be mutter. What's the problem with it? What's the problem with such a kula? So what did we say already? Where's that heter of the Rama found? In Hilchos? Bishul Akum. We just got through saying that you can't necessarily extrapolate from the halachos of Bishul Akum to the halachos of Pasakum. Just because by Bishul Akum you have such a heter does not mean that you have such a heter by Pasakum. So that's one weakness in that argument. Another weakness in that argument is that it's very likely that an employee in your bakery is not your servant. It's a totally different kind of relationship. And we're going to discuss this when we get to Bishul Akum, how we're magdir a servant and what the svara is, that if a servant is doing the cooking, that it's not a problem with Bishul Akum. Whatever the svara is does not seem to work for an employee in your bakery. Right? So that's why it would seem that a bakery owned by a Jew, l'chora, according to the Shach, we should be machmir, and it does not seem that we would have the heter of the idea that the Jew is that the Jew is employing the guy, and therefore the guy is his servant. But Rav Moshe says maybe there's another heter. Maybe there's more room for heter. Rav Moshe says, you know, if you were to stop someone on the street and just tell them this halacha of the tour, that if the Shach quotes over here, that if a non-Jew owns the bakery, that's okay, that's not Pasakum, but if a Jew owns the bakery, that becomes Pasakum. It's so counterintuitive that it really needs some stronger hesber. It's so backwards. It's going to be more Pasakum when a Jew owns the bakery than when a non-Jew owns the bakery. So Rav Moshe Yordei Chelik Aleph Simen Memhei writes as follows. He quotes that tour. He says, Hine l'charu tamua. My time aloya gambe pashalakum shafa akum isr bishalakum dechimachmashu pashalakum adifalakel. There's more reason to be makel when it's owned by a non-Jew. So he says, now what happened was, Kishuhutra Pasaku me Isr Bishal, the end of the first paragraph, Vadim Istavir Shagam Pas Yisol Shafa Akum Yebachal Aheter. When they were Matir Pas Akum from the Isr, it's Mistavir that they were Matir, not only Pas Akum, but even Pas that's owned by a Jew, baked by a non Jew. Vitzarach Lomar, Shemisvar Sovra Kenatur, the Kivin the Be'etzam Gam Pasu Bachal Isr Bishal, Achshetiru Mipnea Dochak, Nimtza sheyesh inyan ha'iser adayin, v'lachain b'pas yisol shalek adochak diyochel iskropol mishayim lo atiru. Basically, the svar we said before, that the iser is still there of pas akum. We were makel with it because of dochak. So we don't just look at it as, oh, we got rid of the iser and therefore the iser doesn't apply. No, the iser is always there. In situations where it's a major dochak, where it's a major problem, so we're going to be makel. Situations that aren't a major problem, we're not going to be makel. When it's a non-Jewish owned bakery, major problem. Therefore, we need to be makel. When it's a Jewish owned bakery, not a major problem. So we don't need to be makel. But in Svara, or at least in theory, the idea is that the Isser of Pas Akum is there. It's always there. It's just a question, is it a situation of Dochak or not? So he says, V'lechein, ulai hu rak ba'ofen shein sarach lepa'olin. He says, when do we assume that it's not a major need because a Jew is running the show? He says, that's only if a Jew is able to help out. What if a Jew owns a bakery that has 18 branches throughout the whole Eastern Seaboard? Yeah, he's supposed to go to every single bakery every night and make sure that he does something to help out? It's impossible. He's got hundreds of employees. So that's just as much of a docha. And Mela, if it's just as much of a dochak, then there's just as much of a reason to be makil in the end of the day. Because what's the reason to be makil? That it's a Pas Akum is there for the Goyish bakery the same way it is for the Jewish bakery. It's just that in a Goyish bakery, it's a dochak, it's too difficult. Well, in a Jewish bakery where he's got a million different branches and hundreds of employees, it's also too difficult. So Rav Moshe says, in that situation where you have a major industrial bakery or something like that, or let's say the Jew is a silent partner, someone was asking last night, the Jew owns stock in the bakery or in the Entman's company, and he owns a major. But he doesn't even know where the bakeries are. He happens to own major parts of the company, but he's not there. He's a silent partner in the whole endeavor. So that's not easy for him to just show up and go and take care of it. So he says, by a palter gadol, shein yochel efels below a poldom, where the Jew can't do the baking. He needs workers to do the baking, so maybe there's not going to be any such iser. And Rav Moshe says, I'm confident enough in that svara that I'm willing to rely on it. La halacha, he says, I think you can rely on it. And certainly, kal v'chomer, you can rely on it if the people that are doing the baking are a mumar and they're not really a guy. If it's a mechal shabbos paresia, people who are non from Jews, even though the Avnei Nezer is machmir by a mumar, because the Avnei Nezer holds that it's aser to marry the daughter of a mumar if she too is a mumeris. It's the same as marrying a non-Jew, the Avnei Nezer holds. So Avnei Nezer holds that it's that Pas Akum is aser even when it's a mumar, when it's not a real guy. Rav Moshe says, at least with the mumar, you know, this is what we discussed before, being mitzadeh, different shitos l'kula. So he says, I'm willing to rely on my svari in general, but especially when there's another tzad l'hakel, namely that the person doing the baking is actually a Jew, is not actually a guy. That's Rav Moshe. Now, the Chalkos Binyamin just points out in the Biurim that you just need to be careful about this. Because Rav Moshe's svari is, well, it's impossible. How are you going to be able to participate in the bishul? So there's tzvei dinim in impossible. Right, some things are impossible because they're really impossible, and some things are impossible. You call them impossible because they're inconvenient. They're not as easy to do, or it might cost you some money to do it. So if it's impossible because you have a bakery in Florida and a bakery in Virginia and a bakery in New York and you're not going to be able to get to all of them and you're not going to be able to participate in all of them, so that's impossible. Right, that makes sense. That's impossible. Says Rabbi Yamin Cohen, but if you own a local bakery, it's just a real hassle for you to be involved. You're a businessman. You just happen to own it, and it's just a hassle for you to be involved. And it would slow up the process if they had to wait for you to do something before they got all the baking going. It would just slow things up, and then you wouldn't be able to make as much money. So not making as much money is not impossible. That's not what we call impossible. So he thought that in such a circumstance, you should not be making. Yeah.
There's a bakery, one of the franchises, bakeries where you live, you have to go to that one? Are you involved in that part?
Oh, meaning if the guy who owns it happens to have one of the franchise bayim. Meaning, do you say that it's a broad? It's a good question. Probably he, according to this Chalkas Binyam, probably he should, because that's, you know, it's, there's no din of a franchise in, you know, in halacha. It's that he only happens to own 10 bakeries. So for the other 9, it's impossible. For this one, it is possible. Right? Probably that would be what I would imagine the Chalkas Binyam would say. Good. So that's when it comes to bakeries that are owned by a Jew. Now let's get into some specific foods, whether they're subject to pasakum or not subject to pasakum. Cookies, crackers, foods like that, where clearly they're baked. It's mizonos. So the question is it pasakum or is that bishalakum? Major nafkamina, can you rely on palter? Can you not rely on palter? Do we when the OU gives the hashkacha to Oreo, do they make a mashkiach, turn on the machines? By Oreo, or do they say no? It's paspalter, and therefore it's okay that the Pashka's cookies aren't as good, and therefore even according to the Mechaber, assuming that you hold the Pashka's cookies are not as good, so then even according to the Mechaber, it would be mutter to buy the Oreo cookies, right? So should they make them turn on the machines or not? So Tosas Maseches Beitz Daf Tezayin and Beis, which is source number 32. I feel bad. I put the whole Tosas on only the last two and a half lines. What I'm really interested in. Tosus writes at the end, "Va'osa nailish midalom evarchan alehu birchas hamotzi yesh behen mishum bishule nachrim." He says it's a very simple question. You have to ask yourself if it's pas or bishul. Do you make hamotzi on it? If you don't make hamotzi on it, it's bishul. It's not pas. You don't make hamotzi on a cookie. You make mizonos on a cookie. Maybe it's bishul. It's not pas. And the OU mashkiach has to turn it on. That's one day in Tosus. Umihu. Omer Harav Rabbeinu Yechiel, de'ein behem yishum bishulei nachrim, kiven de derech hafiyas pas avad lehu. What does that mean? Derech hafiyas pas avad lehu. Anyone get a chance to see that? What does that mean? Even if you didn't see it. You bake it the way you would bake bread. Meaning, you don't cook it, you bake it. You bake it in an oven, you make a dough, and it just happens to be a sweeter dough. So that's why it's pas avad b'kisnin, because it's a sweeter dough, or because you're baking it to a crisp to make it like a cracker, which is one of the definitions of pasal baba kisnin. So that's why it's sweeter. I mean, that's why it's pasal baba kisnin, it's mizonos. But the way the method of baking is the same method you would use for bread. And the definition of pasakum is based on the method. It's not based on what kind of food it is. It's based on how you go ahead and bake it. Why? What's that talion? That machlokas. Whether it's talion, what the resulting food is, or whether it's tully on how one would go about the process of preparing it.
Maybe what the food is.
You're saying, what's the lumdus of that machlokas? Whether that the first day until it says tully on what the food is. This food is not something you say emotzi on, mail it's not pasakum. Second day until it says, I don't care that you don't say emotzi on it. You bake it like bread. What creates the sense of chasnus? What creates the sense of assimilation, of closeness, of kurva that's going to lead to chasnus? Is it that he's providing you with something substantial? Or is it that he's making such a tremendous effort on your behalf? If he's providing you with something substantial, so then, end of the day, I want, bottom line, is he giving me bread, or is he giving me non-bread over here? What is it? Do I make hamotzi, do I not make hamotzi? Right? L'chora, that's a focus on the item itself. Whereas if you're focused on the process, so then the concern might be about the process. That here he's being matriach himself to do all of this for me. You have to work that out in the halacha and see if that really works out. Because Einol al Shulchan Malachim, for instance, right? Is that about the process? It's hard to say that's about the process. Einol al Shulchan Malachim is about what you're getting in the end. How much of a service am I getting from him in the end? I could have. It's not even that good, right? It's about the cheftz in the end. So you have to just. Throwing out a svar and lum, this is nice. You have to really put it through the ringer and see if it holds any water.
Is this within pasakum or is this pasakum versus bishul?
Pas versus bishul. Good call. Right. Yeah, pas versus bishul. And both are a concern of chasnus on some level.
This,
so,
yeah,
right. The question is, where is there more of a concern of chasnus, less of a concern of chasnus?
Which one would have the other fact that they might have their own kosher food with it also? Meaning, if it's more
that's only bishul. That's only
right, that's bishul. We say that that also is ramification. If we say it's effort versus research,
good.
Okay.
Bishul. Good. Very good. Yeah.
Even if according to the Man Yomer that we hold on machlokas, it depends whether it's bread or not. Because I want bread, right? A lot of people would rather Oreos than bread.
Yeah, but that's not, I mean, people would rather have, people would rather have anything at any given moment, but bread is a staple. Bread is something that's inherently chashuv. Like so the Chalkas Binyamin said, that's why he doesn't think that it even needs to be subject to Halal Shulchan Malachim. It's inherently chashuv. So, we'll get to that discussion though. Let's say Pasa Baba Kistin. Is Pasa Baba Kistin inherently chashuv also? Or is it not inherently chashuv? So okay, one second. Let me just finish this Tosos because there's another point Tosos makes. So again, so far what do we have? 2 days in Tosos. Are cookies and crackers subject to pas or bishul akum? First day in Tosos is that they're subject to bishul, not pas akum, because you don't make abotzi on them. Second day in Tosos, Rabbeinu Chiel, they're subject to pas akum. Why? Svara number one, because you bake it the same way you bake bread. But then he throws another svara out there. Don't tell me that cookies are mizonos, that cake is mizonos. If you're kaveh suda, then it's a motzi. Pasa baba kistin is also a motzi. You just have to treat it right. If you're kaveh suda, then it's a motzi. So that's also going to be pasakum, not bishalakum. 2 days in Tosfos, when you have cookies, if you're going to hold that cookies are pas, what's the reason that they're pas? Is it because the procedure is the same as the procedure of pas? Or is it that at the end of the day, you're going to make hamotzi on it also? Those are the 2 days in Tosos. Now, the Shach in Sivkot and Yudches writes that, how do we paskin? So he says, it depends what kind of pas baba kistin you have. There's pas baba kistin, let's say, of a cake, and then there's pasa baba kistin of cookies or pretzels or things like that. What's the difference? How do you make a cake? You ever see anyone make a cake? How do you make a cake? What do you put into the oven? What is it when you're putting it into the oven when you make a cake? You're putting in essentially a liquid. It's what we call a blila raka. It pours. It's not a dough. Unless you're making like a kakosh cake or something like that. But a typical cake that you would make is a blila raka. A cookie is made with a blila ava. It's a dough. It's a thick dough. So says the Shach, if it's a blila ava, then it's going to be pas akum. If it's a blila raka, then it's going to be bishul akum. Which day in Tosos is the Shach assuming like? Now Rabbeinu Yechiel holds that when it comes to pas akum, when it comes to cakes and the like, it's pasakum. But we had two possible svaras why it's pasakum. Is it because the process is the same? Or is it because if you eat enough of it, it's hamotzi? So if it's about the process, no? If it's about the process being the same, well, is the process the same when you have a blila raka? It's not at all the same. You're not kneading anything, you're not shaping anything, you're just pouring it into the pan. It's a totally different process. But if it's about making a motzi when you kovei suda on it, you kovei suda on cake, even though it was a blila raka, you still make a motzi. So then it should be a din of pas. So when the Shach says that it's only by blila ava that you're going to have it, that you're going to consider a pas, he must be assuming, like the Deya in Rabbeinu Yechiel, like that Shita in Tosfos that says that it's all about the process, that it's made the same way you make bread. So therefore, only those types of mizonos foods that taka are made the same way you make bread would in fact be included in pas akum. Those types of mizonos foods that are not made the same way you make bread would not be included in pas akum. That would be bishul akum. If the Shach would have held the other day that it's not about how you make it, but it's about whether you make hamotzi on it ever, so then the Shach would have said bli lava and bli laraka, you should consider pas. Because you make hamotzi on both. Yeah.
Just in the next couple words of the Shach, bishrin torah lechem.
Yeah.
So what is that talking about? That's talking about within the meat beforehand, or is it talking about
No, I think because it's a blila ava, it takes on the look of bread. It looks more like bread.
We're talking about that's a natural thing. It's not a requirement.
Yeah, I think that's right. Okay. I think so. So that's the Shach within clearly understanding one day within the Rabbeinu Yechiel. Chalkas Binyamin thinks that even a blila raka has a din of pas. Rabbi Binyamin Cohen brings rayas in Sivkat and Samach Dalid, which again is here somewhere. Next packet is smaller because can't deal with all those flipping pages. We're splitting up Bishul Akum into two or three packets. So he says a lot of people are chalik on the Shach and hold that that even Blila Raka has din of pas, because it has din of pas of Abakisnin, and you would make a motzi on it, and Birchas HaMazon if you were to be Koveya Su'uda on it. But, he says, that's only if the pas of Abakisnin is not cooked, if it's baked. But when it's cooked, or it's fried, or deep fried, that might be a different story. Where do you have a Blila Ava, any dough that's possible because then it's deep fried? Donuts. Dunkin' Donuts.
That's like a cake mix, right?
A blila ava would be like a dough, like a, right? A blila raka would be like a just a liquidy mix.
So are donuts more dough?
I think so. I think they're dough, aren't they? I think so. I've never seen them make the donuts except for the commercials. You have? And?
At Krispy Kreme, they used to.
And it's a dough, right? Is it?
Yeah,
it's a real dough, and they just drop it into boiling oil, and that's how it gets so yummy, right? That's the it's very healthy. So the when it comes to donuts, so based on everything we know about the halacha of what defines pas, donuts l'chora should seem to be bishul rather than pas. The process is not at all the same, even when it's a blila ava. The process is not at all the same. Question is, would you ever make hamotzi on it? The Ramah in Or Chaim, Kuf Samaches, says no. You wouldn't make hamotzi even if you're Kovei Asuda on it. So if that's the case, if it's the type of thing, something that, again, we're not talking about Entenmann's donuts. Entenmann's donuts are baked. Baked donuts, you wouldn't make hamotzi if you're Kovei Asuda on it. We're talking about Dunkin' Donuts, where they're fried in, deep fried in oil. So L'chori, you would not make hamotzi on it, so it doesn't fit any of the definitions of pas, and l'chora that should definitely be subject to bishul akum. I assume, I never asked the Vad, but I assume they have someone turning on the fryers in Dunkin' Donuts each morning. I assume, I have no idea. Bagels are an interesting discussion in halacha. Most of the truth about bagels. Why? You ever see how a bagel is made? What do they do with bagels? They take dough, they drop it in whatever, water, oil, or something until it fluffs up a little bit, and then they bake it. So first they do a bishul, then they do an afiyah. So what's the status of that? If you start with a bishul, then you start with an afiyah. So Rav Moshe, in a source we saw a while ago, source number 13, truth is, it's a very fascinating tshuva because he talks about eight different topics in it, but the first topic that he talks about is making bagels. Then he talks about mixed dancing and whatever. If you should take off your yarmulke when you go to a club, and, you know, to go mixed dancing. He says no, interestingly. Just tell them to keep the yarmulkes on. You don't tell someone to do second Avera just because they're doing one Avera. Fascinating. Okay, but anyway, Rav Moshe says, B'dvar ha-bagel, asher ba'odi isa nosmosa b'mayim rotchin. They put it in boiling water when it's still dough, and then they bake it in the tanner. Is that bishul akum? He says, Pashal ani asaiti, mikivin sha bishul k'tas al idei ha-mayim rotchim, ha-isa isa ru'il achila, lo nesra mitzav bishul akum. Him rak b'din pas akum shal paltr shnogin la'atir. He says, you don't have a problem with bishul akum, because it only makes it a little bit royal achila, it doesn't finish it off, and you would have an issue of pas akum, but we're mekel because pas palter, so we're always mekel and pas palter, so you wouldn't have that problem, especially since you can't find bagels made by Jews that are as good. The gam kivan she bagel kosev kvod taras harav shalom matzui shal Yisrael af she pas achum matzui. Plus, he says very often you don't find Jewish bagels at all. I don't know if the Metzius has changed. But he does seem to assume that when it comes to the bagel, that you're not going to have that you would have to put it through both set of criteria. That you'd have to put it through the criteria of bishul and the criteria of pas. But he thinks you come out clean on both ends anyway. That in terms of the bishul, he's not doing enough. That it's going to be a problem of bishul akum. That the bishul doesn't do enough to the bagel to make it a problem of bishul akum. And in terms of pas, he thinks that since it's palter anyway, most of the time, so you're not going to have a problem with the pas akum of the bagel. The issue becomes that sometimes when they do put it in the water, it becomes minimally edible already at that point. It's not totally unedible. So it could be that there's room to argue that for that reason alone it should be subject to bishul akum. Okay, cereals is also a major discussion during Aseres Yemei. Should we be makpid about cereals? Should we not be makpid about cereals during Aseres Yemei Tshuva? Cheerios. So Rabbi Jachter quotes in his article that Rav Shechter said Cheerios aren't pasav abekisnin, but I don't think he realized that it's because Rav Shechter holds that Cheerios aren't mizonos. He holds that they're not made from the five grains. He holds oats aren't one of the five grains. He holds like Professor Felix But normal cereals, it's a major machlok saposkim, whether it has a din of pasal babakistan, and we had a 10-minute halacha share on this once, right? Whether you what bracha you make on cereals, whether it has a din of pasal babakistan. So if it doesn't have a din of pasal babakistan, so l'chor doesn't, it's for sure not an issue. If it does have a din of pasal babakistan, so it would be subject to the same discussion we had before in regards to other types of pasal babakistan. What about breadcrumbs? You make you take breadcrumbs and you cover chicken cutlets with breadcrumbs or something like that. So there are reasons to be mekel. First of all, it may not be subject to pasachim because you're going ahead and cooking it afterwards. Since you're going and frying it, so it could be that we no longer pay attention to the pas element of it. It now becomes, we follow the ikar food, and the ikar food is being cooked, and therefore it's bishul. Plus, if a Jew is going to do half of the preparing process, even though it was baked in advance, but then the Jew goes and cooks it afterwards to finish off the preparation, it could be that that's a strong enough contribution by the Jew. So you could buy breadcrumbs that were baked by a non-Jew, but you're going to use them in a way where you're just covering chicken with it, and then you're going to rebake it, recook it, do something like that. So then there's certainly much room to be makel when it comes to that kind of thing. So that is the end of Pasakum for us. Be'ezras Hashem Yisbarach. Tomorrow, back to regular time, we will start at 9 o'clock. And we will do Bishalakum.